Church Radio Program In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. Today is Tuesday, February 3rd, 2015. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. The crew in the title refers to those of us at the LL Center, beginning with Jim McCarty, Carla's husband, scribe for the Raw Contact, and president of LL Research. Gary and I, devoted seekers of the Law of One, manage LL from the home office. LL Research is a nonprofit organization dedicated to freely sharing spiritually oriented information and fostering community, and towards this end has two websites, the archive website llresearch.org and the community website bringforth.org. Together they offer over 1,300 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. We will be discussing questions that come from you. If you'd like to ask us a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. Again, that number is 646-595-2294. If interested in submitting a question when we're not on the air, please visit our show's webpage at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Austin, and we're talking with Carla L. Ruckert and the home crew of LL Research. Is everybody here and ready to go?
Ready.
We are.
Yes, sir.
Alrighty. Our opening riff today comes from a Kuo session on February 18th, 1996. And Kuo says, "The truth is that each has all of the available distortions within a vast memory that lies deep within the mind complex, and within this deep memory lie recollections of being many, many things, many plants, many animals, many minerals, elements, and states. For this protean, plastic, endlessly reforming material that houses the energy that is consciousness is that which, like the various parts of the sea, may seem to split into this wave and that, this bubble and that froth. And yet it is all one. It is all the one water, and there is in truth no differentiation, and yet you have come out of that sea of consciousness. You have dressed yourself in a body of flesh, and you have deliberately come into the land of the shadows, there to face the choices that a person of energy can make, for this energy comes to each as a gift of the one infinite creator."
Thank you. One of my favorite tuning songs is I am a bubble, make me the sea. And how I wish that I had the consciousness of the sea at all times and could forsake being a little bubble in Carla. We all are in that same situation. Blessed or cursed or both with the consciousness of individuality. And yet in truth we are all that is. I have a lot of difficulty accessing that truth. How are we all? How are we any great part of all that is? We are so sewn about with our awareness of ourselves, of our own consciousness, of our own personality, our own selfhood. And I guess that's good in a way because it helps us to relate to each other, because all of us are like that. We are all individuals, but we come together invoking the higher truth that we are all one. I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for my companionship with Jim and Gary and Austin and with all of you. And I rest in the knowledge that as foolish as I am, I am loved. And I love the people around me very much. And together we try very hard to serve. To serve individuals and to serve the whole. Question for today.
Hello. Thank you for that. We are all blessed by your companionship as well.
Well, thank you.
We actually have a friend calling on the line for our first question. We have JP with us. How are you doing today, JP?
I'm doing great. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hey, JP.
Hey.
Hey.
What can we do for you today?
Well, thanks. Two weeks ago, you guys, the first question, that was such an extra special show. It was so good. And somebody called in and asked about thought forms. And you guys really tore that apart really, really well. But there was one kind of somebody talks about UFOs. There's so many subsections of that. Just so many different other kind of aspects that's all included and encompassed in UFOs. It's such a broad field. And Jim talked about cattle mutilations and Men in Black. But there was one area and nobody mentioned, and I think about it every now and then, it's a little scary, and I'm sorry I'm even asking. It's so woo-woo and over the top. But there is a subsection in the UFO culture called alien abduction, human beings being taken. And it's so, in the last 5 years, it's so widespread, websites and videos and books and on and on and on. And I always want to know, is that possibly actually real, or is it some form of thought forms or self-induced hallucinations, or what can you tell me about that whole big subset of the culture?
Well, I'll just say right away, I myself have not experienced that, and I don't know anyone who has. Guys,
it's a really good question. I think a lot of people come to the Law of One through UFOs, and abductions are probably one of the biggest part of the UFO mythology, and there are tons of people experiencing them. I've never experienced anything quite as vivid as a lot of people tend to describe. There is an interview that we normally reference. Gary, what is the interview that we normally guide people to for that?
Scott Manilker's interview with Deborah Lindemann, I believe her name is. I can email you the link, JP.
And if anybody else is interested, email us and ask us for that link, and we'll send it to you.
Okay.
But they're talking about thought forms. As far as I understand it, abductions can be either a thought form or more literally physical. But I think that they probably tend towards more of the thought form variety. But it's really hard to say. It's so hard to get good, solid, valid information because people's testimony varies so widely and experiences vary. Some of them sound very, very positive and uplifting, and some of them are just very, very scary and tend to be very traumatic for people. And Ra talks about abductions in a couple different lights, basically saying that both the Confederation and the Orion Empire have different reasons for doing something like this, and it's more common that I think Orion would do it. But there are also what Ra would call unaffiliated abductions of the ETs that don't necessarily have an affiliation with the Confederation or Orion. Does anybody else have any good thoughts for abductions? I don't think we're coming up with much here.
Back in 2010, Carla was invited to speak at the 4th Annual World Conference on global politics in Hawaii. And Dr. Michael E. Sala was one of the founders of the group there. And he's written a book, which I got while I was there. It's called Exposing U.S. Government Policies on Extraterrestrial Life. And I've read the book a number of times, and I've never seen a book that is so well documented with footnotes. He's got a number of different types of sources that he got his information from. And the best source was what he would call the whistleblower. And these are members of the U.S. military at various levels of rank. And others are people, civilians that work within certain black ops types of programs. And I guess you'd say the bottom line of it all was that there are a number of extraterrestrial entities of what we would call a negative orientation who would like to gain control over various parts of our planet, or if not the whole thing. And that they have made agreements and treaties with our government and other governments, which they continually break, but they make, again, treaties, and we make treaties with them because they are obviously more powerful than we are. And what they seem to need that they can't get anywhere else is genetic material, because apparently there are some of them that they're kind of winding down as a species. They've inbred so long that they have very little vitality left, and they need new blood, literally. So they abduct various people with the permission of the U.S. government and take from them various types of genetic material. Plus, they also seem to impregnate the females and return at a later time to retrieve the offspring. And that was the general gist of the book. And like I said, you know, it's you're right about the woo-woo factor. There's lots of woo-woo here. But there's also a lot of footnotes that just blow your mind. So I tell people about this book, and I say, don't read the book if you don't think you can accept that idea, because it's so well documented that you're really not going to have a whole lot of choice. So I would recommend it if you're interested. It's Exposing the U.S. Government Policies on Extraterrestrial Life, and it's by Dr. Michael E. Sala, Ph.D. And it's printed in 2009.
It's great answers by Austin and Jim. I have very little to add, except that in either the case of the positive or the negative, they will be differentiated according to their respect for the person they are contacting and the feelings the person has afterwards, according to my understanding. A person who has experienced an abduction of a negative sort, whether their physical body was removed from Earth or it was just a thought sequence of events, will probably have a feeling of being violated or feeling disempowered or having been treated like an animal or of that sort, whereas a positive contact should leave the experience feeling empowered and awakened to love and light and maybe reinvested with a new sense of meaning and purpose, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask, Carla?
Go ahead, JP.
Hi. Would Carla or anybody know if there's anything special people can do to protect themselves, or is just having the Christ-seeking mindset, is that enough to keep oneself safe?
Yes, I think that's mostly going to be plenty. It's just to assert the truth that you are indissolubly who you are, and you're not going to be removed from that. I think if you rest in that truth, and when you are finding yourself being afraid, just to insist on that for yourself, I think that's probably the best. What do you think, Jim?
Yeah, send love and light to anybody that might have any kind of ill intentions toward you. And just embrace the oneness of all creation. Whatever these entities are attempting to do, they are also still the creator. They've chosen to follow a different path. And I guess this moves again into another frame of reference that we've been researching lately, Carla and I, since last September. We've been reading a series of books by three different authors on pre-incarnative choices that we all make. And we each make choices that in the incarnation might look like they were really not such a good choice because they bring on a lot of suffering. And it might be that a lot of people have made themselves available to being of service in such and such a way. And maybe one of the ways is that they would be abducted. But in that type of choice, whatever it is, and however it looks in this incarnation, if you can embrace whatever situation you face with a whole heart and with love for everyone involved, then you get from that situation a great lesson, a lesson that wouldn't be possible unless you were able to go through the trials and tribulations of whatever that path might be. And it's every path that you can think of, from murder or rape or incest or poverty or loneliness or insanity or... we've just recently been reading a section on caregivers and why would people set themselves up, one, to be so incapacitated to need a caregiver that would spend the rest of the life taking care of that person. And in these situations, it's there's a whole lot that comes from it, and you get more out of it the more you're able to love and accept. So like Carla said, you know, give love and give acceptance and let the chips fall where they may, because there's good stuff coming. I mean, we're all one. There are no mistakes.
And there's a great Ra quote that highlights that fact from Session 95. Ra says, "To the pure, all that is encountered speaks of the love and the light of the one infinite creator. The cruelest blow is seen with the ambience of challenges offered and opportunities to come. Thusly, the great pitch of light is held high above such an one so that all interpretation may be seen to be protected by light."
Yeah, great quote.
Regarding the scenario specifically of a positive entity being abducted by negative beings, doesn't Ra say somewhere that those of the Orion Empire will target the weak-minded and the not strongly polarized, because if they made a mistaken contact with a positive entity, it would send their minions into disarray or
right.
something?
That's
true,
right.
too.
Mm-hmm. There is a part of that. And I think that, like Jim was saying, there may be some motives as far as gathering some kind of genetic material, but I also think there's always the mentality of the Orion, the negative ETs, polarizing in their chosen path. And the abductions, I'm sure, help them do that because they are helping to perpetuate a sort of cycle of fear and control over these lower beings. But if they, like Gary was saying, they would tend to avoid contacting somebody who would interpret the experience in love and light, because then they would fail at polarizing and actually lose their own polarization because of that.
Right.
So basically what we're saying, JP, is just keep doing what you're doing and spreading the love that you spread, and hopefully you should be okay.
Yeah, that's inherently protecting in and of itself.
Yeah. The greatest protector is love.
And remember how rare such a thing might be.
Yeah.
It isn't as though you're guarding against something that, oh my God, it might happen. Well, rarely, very rarely it might happen. But for the most part, 99 out of 100 times, probably more than that, it will not ever happen.
Yeah, and there are a lot of things that you can be worried about in this lifetime without worrying about alien abductions, and it doesn't do a whole lot of good to really stress about it a whole lot. As long as you are on this path of light and you know, prayer, contemplation, meditation, then anything that happens, whether it's something woo-woo like alien abductions or just something that would normally happen to an everyday person in everyday life, you will be protected.
Thanks, guys.
You got it all, JP?
That was a very satisfying answer. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, JP.
So thank you for calling in, and thank you so much for your question and your continued support. All righty. Our first question that was sent in for the show comes from Curtis via email, who writes, "I feel myself becoming more and more powerful. The flow of love in me is changing the projection of my personality. My path is just beginning. What becomes a service is the manifestation of the power used with distortion to recognize yourself as creator. What do you think of this? Aspects of my physical reality is what I'm beginning to desire to exert my power to create. The mind distortions often lead myself astray. I can only purify myself in attempts to understand how this work is done. I think that the Law of One is a practice of being. The act of compassion brings harmony. I am naive in some respects. And he would like our thoughts on that, and then he has a second part to that question.
In attempting to digest and consider my own thoughts on his question, I would focus in on his very first sentence where he says, I feel myself becoming more and more powerful. And I asked myself, what to me is an expression of power on the positive path? And I see the following as manifestations or expressions of power along that path. That includes the power to serve, the power to accept, the power to direct your will, the power to set your intention, the power to practice presence, the power to not be attached to outcome, the power to choose your response to a situation, the power to commit yourself to your path, power to invoke faith and fearlessness, and ultimately the power to give yourself to the Creator and the power to surrender. I don't see that the incarnate self, the personality shell, as powerful per se on the positive path. I see that the power that the positive entity has is not one of force, but a power of yielding and accepting and surrendering. And in this respect, it may be seen that that power is moving through, not from, the positive entity. I think there is merit in saying that you feel yourself becoming stronger, and that you are stronger on your own two feet, you're more aware, you're more disciplined, more attuned, and perhaps less susceptible to the rising and falling patterns of the mind and the body, more able to choose your response to the moment. And you also said in that question statement that, quote, I think that the Law of One is a practice of being. And there is a lot in this material about doing and activity and making choices and decisions and choosing paths, so on and so forth. But at its heart, I think that is precisely correct. I think the Law of One is a practice of being and is about beingness that informs all doing. That's my thoughts.
Thank you, Gary. What do you think about it, Carla?
Well, I think Gary hit the nail on the head. I think if you rest in what you know, that all is well and all will be well, that that is in and of itself a protection and a power. And I think it is to the weaker minded that fear comes forth, and fear makes one susceptible to more fear. So the best protection wise is simply to rest in what you already know, that you are who you are, and you're not going to be removed from your personality or your selfhood. I think that comes to those who want it for some reason or fear it to the point where the fear becomes self-actualizing.
Jim, did you have any thoughts to offer for Curtis?
Well, I was looking at his sentence, the third sentence, that what becomes a service is the manifestation of the power used with distortion to recognize yourself as a creator. And then in the next paragraph, it says, the mind distortions often lead myself astray. So I'm thinking maybe if the mind distortions were simplified to one desire, and that would be to see the creator and serve the creator everywhere, that you wouldn't have to worry about what to create or how to create, just look at the situation you find yourself in, the person that you have met in your daily round of activities, and just let the interaction between you determine how best you can love and serve and see that person as the creator. I don't think we can really, I can't really imagine framing my mind in such a way, well, I'm going to create something and this will be a way of seeing myself as a creator. It seems to me to be a little too self-centered, that we need to look outward at those around us and see more of the creator there and let the spontaneous flowing of love through our heart in the moment determine what we do. And if we have a creative power that can be helpful, then let it be helpful in whatever the moment says.
That's actually pretty similar to the point I was going to bring up, and that I think he's essentially correct when he says that sentence, where what becomes a service is the manifestation of power used with the distortion to recognize yourself as creator. Ra says something kind of similar in session 75 and question 23. Ra says, as the adept becomes a more and more consciously crystallized entity, it gradually manifests more and more of that which it always has been since before time, that is, the one infinite creator. So I think that is right, but I think there's an aspect of that kind of missing from the perspective that Curtis shares, and that it is not just the self that is the creator, it's everything around us that's the creator. Similar to what Carla was talking about in the opening riff, you can be a bubble in the sea and you become the sea. All the other bubbles are also the sea. And it's not you don't become some sort of great sea of individualistic power. You become one with everything else. And I think the manifestation of the creator is not just manifesting a personal type of power, but recognizing where our service can be as a type of power as well, instead of determining what your power is. And anybody else have any more thoughts on that before we jump to Curtis's next question?
Not I.
Let's jump.
No, I think that was a very good summation.
All righty. Curtis then goes on to ask, I have thought of learning about magic. Do you know where I should begin? And then he adds, thank you, LL Research, for the opportunity to understand a different paradigm on reality.
My favorite book is Magic, It's Ritual, Power, and Purpose by William E. Butler. I'm pretty sure that it's in print in paperback. And I've seen it in the last couple of years on Amazon.
And also by the same author, The Magician, His Training and Work. But I would also add that it would be a good idea to learn about magic with a friend or two, a little group, so that you look upon the effort as being something that is to be shared with others and to be focused in service to others, rather than, say, increasing one's personal power just to have personal power. That would be a little too easy to go off on the service to self path.
Right, it certainly would. Yeah, that's a good idea to do if you have a group of friends to investigate such questions with that group.
What are your thoughts, Gary?
To positively oriented people, it would only be something to share in service to them, not in service to yourself. Yeah, I'm sorry, Gary.
That's fine. I was kind of stymied myself for a moment. Ra recommended the same to you three, actually, to undertake the magical working and training together as a group, and I believe for reasons similar to what Jim just stated.
Right.
And my only contribution to Curtis's question, as I have never consciously undertaken any sort of magical training or research for that matter, is to read 76.4, where Ra says, the efficacy of this ritual I believe they're talking about the banishing ritual?
Yes.
Okay. It is only beginning to be, shall we say, at the lower limits of the truly magical. In doing the working, those aspiring to adepthood have done the equivalent of beginning the schoolwork many grades ahead. For the intelligent student, this is not to be discouraged. Rather, to be encouraged is the homework, the reading, the writing, the arithmetic, as you might metaphorically call the elementary steps towards the study of being. It is the being that informs the working, not the working that informs the being. So, Curtis, on your path to learning to understand and practice magic, Ra says that it is the being that informs the working, and in the study of being, there is Ra's maxim to know yourself and accept yourself and become the creator. So, I think that is the fundamental and the primary work, and then magical training can be an outgrowth of that.
Right. I think knowing yourself is just the great foundation before any magical work. And there's lots in the raw material that can help you do that, such as in session 5 and carries on into session 6. Ra begins to give teachings having to do with the healing process, but later in the material, Ra says that these teachings can also be used just to have a general understanding of the self. And so starting in session 5, question 2, Ra gives some really great exercises that you can do that are sort of preliminary to any kind of healing or magical work or anything, because just a solid foundation is so important. And Ra even says that, to have self-knowledge is to have firm ground, something like that, Gary?
Yeah, is to have the feet placed firmly upon the ground. Something. Jim, you know it?
I'm sorry, say again.
Here it is. To know yourself is to have foundation upon firm ground.
Yeah.
And firm ground is important for magic or healing or anything
right,
like that.
Right, right.
So I think I would start there. But there's also a book mentioned, I think Don asked about it. I've never read it, but from what I understand, it's good to help people understand what happens when you go put yourself on a path of magic, and that is a book called Initiation by, excuse me.
W.E. Butler.
Yeah, that's W.E. Butler.
No, Elizabeth H., I think.
Yeah, Elizabeth
H.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's...
Anyway, yeah, that is a very good book.
Just to give you an idea of what you are committing yourself to when you commit yourself to learning magic, because there is an aspect in the raw material talked about the law of responsibility, to where if you start learning about something like magic and you choose to walk closer and closer to the light, the responsibility to utilize what you're learning becomes greater and your catalyst increases. And you have to understand what you're getting into before you really dive into it.
I once investigated that. I had been offered kind invitation from someone who knew a great deal about magic to take me on as a student. And I looked into it to see what it would take, and I determined that it would take a minimum of 2 hours a day work to pursue that course. And I didn't have 2 hours every day guaranteed. That is what I needed in order to do the work. So I think you need to determine very carefully what would be required of you if you wanted to learn anything about magic. Magic is not, there is a woo-woo factor, obviously, and focus on the woo-woo factor, but in terms of being a study, there is no woo-woo whatsoever. It is a genuine path of study, and there are all too few people these days who know anything really about it. Jim is a very good one to recommend to you, books to take to read to start out with, and see what you think if you're really, really interested. But it takes a certain amount of time, just like any course of study that has legitimate focus. So just make sure that you've got the time and that you can dedicate yourself not just to the beginning, but after it gets to be more difficult, that you can still dedicate yourself to study.
That's a. It seems just a practical consideration, but it's a really good point, because if you're trying to squeeze in learning to become a magician in a busy life between 9 and 9:30 on, you know, Wednesdays, it may not pan out for you, especially because with magical work, unlike, say, learning how to play the violin, if you can learn the violin between a set time, begin and end time, each session, and then go about and do whatever you want in your own life. But the nature of magical work is such that, as far as I understand, your life has to equal the work that you're attempting to undertake. So it's not just within that circumscribed period where you're reading magical material and practicing and learning, but rather it's from the time you wake to the time you go to sleep and in between.
Right.
My final thought on the idea of magic is that to be of service and to polarize however you want to polarize, this type of magic that you're talking about isn't necessary. It's certainly useful in certain contexts, depending on what you feel your service is and what you want to do. But simply dedicating yourself to loving, like Ross says, there is no greater magic. There is no magic greater than honest distortion towards love. And I think that is a key point in existing in third density. Any more thoughts to offer for Curtis's question on magic?
Nope.
Alrighty. Thank you for those questions, Curtis. Very good questions. Our next questions come from Klaus via email, whose first question has to do with the passage in the raw materials, session 30, question 6. Don asks, I was wondering, on this planet during the second density, I believe there is habitation at the same time space of bipedal entities as and what we call dinosaurs. Is this correct? And then Ra says, I am Ra, this is correct. And then his question about that, which I didn't get onto this paper for us, sorry, Jim and Carla. His question was, what is implied with bipedal entities in this question?
Bipedal entities are just people that walk on 2 feet.
But not necessarily humans as we know them. Might be Cro-Magnon, might be Neanderthal, might be their predecessors.
Jim or Carla, do you know what Don had in mind when he asked that?
No, not really. I think he just had in mind...
He was exploring.
Yeah, two arms, two legs type of people. There's a lot of... speculation says that there weren't any type of human-looking creatures around at that time, but it kind of depends on how you define a human, and human beings themselves probably weren't there, but their predecessors, that from which the human line of the creature came from, were, apparently, according to Ra.
Yeah, in Klaus's question, he asked what is implied. Don may have been implying something, because, like you were saying, Jim, it's a common idea that it might have happened that some type of human walked with dinosaurs. But the flat term bipedal means just using two legs for walking. And in the broadest sense of that word, there were plenty of dinosaurs that just used two legs for walking, too. And so... who knows exactly what Ra was responding to there? Ra could have been hinting that there were some type of entities that we don't really know about right now that may have resembled second density humans in some form, but they could also be talking about the T-Rex that walks on 2 feet. Because in the next question after that question in that session, Don asks to clarify what Ra's talking about, and Ra goes on to say something about evolution and how basically evolution basically does what it needs to do to survive and promote growth. And so there's a very non-specific answer there. So I don't think we can say that Ra was implying anything by answering in the affirmative.
I wish I would have looked up the current understanding of the evolution of humans, because I think the dinosaurs went extinct on that, it's called like the KT boundary, like 65 million years ago or something. So this would have long predated Neanderthals, but I don't know what our own evolutionary track is. But I thought, like, understanding was that mammals were no bigger than rodents at the time of dinosaurs.
Yeah, that's my understanding. But actually, like, I think it's marsupials. I might be wrong. Marsupials being one of the earliest form of mammals, and very small marsupials. But even some marsupials walk on two legs, like kangaroos, and even some smaller marsupials, there are some type of mice that sometimes hop around on two legs.
Done intriguingly, in the next question that Austin was paraphrasing, says these two types of entities seem to be incompatible. So that leads me to believe that maybe he had some early prototype human in mind, though we can only guess. Ra and their answer, as Austin said, when Ra is discussing evolution, Ra says, there are paths that the mind/body complex follows in an attempt to survive. And Ra goes on with a very vague answer. But it's telling in their answer that they say mind/body complex rather than mind-body-spirit complex, indicating clearly that whatever bipedal entity coexisted alongside some period of dinosaur existence, it was strictly a second-density creature.
Good point.
Yeah.
All righty. And Klaus's next question is for Carla. He writes, I was reminded of some passages in Carla's Living the Law of One in which 2012 is mentioned. For example, Carla wrote, it is the date at which the fourth density, the density of love, has its onset. Whether or not 2012 includes the literal end of life as we know it on planet Earth is unknown to me, of course. However, the Confederation suggests that we have plenty of time to finish our natural lives here on Earth. The time that is short and rapidly streaming past is the time to make the choice for ourselves. We have only the years between now and 2012 in which to make that choice. And then another quote, the Confederation talks a lot about a new age, like the new age of our cultural cliche. It is based upon a specific time, the winter solstice of 2012. That is the point at which the age of Pisces in classical Western astrology ends and the age of Aquarius begins. That date is our Earth's graduation day. The Confederation suggests that by that date, it is necessary for each of us to have made the choice of how to live our lives. And then Klaus goes on to ask, I have absolutely no interest in putting anyone on the spot, but I would really appreciate some clarity regarding this, as I have not myself gotten the impression that the Confederation hints at the necessity of making a choice before 2012. This is the case, however, I think the vast majority of people I know would have to go through another cycle. Thank you so much for your efforts.
Thank you, Klaus.
I think that's true. I don't think that for the most part people are prepared to deal with the absolute, okay, do you have it or don't you have it now? Obviously, since 2012 has come and gone since I gave that answer, it now becomes obvious that 2012 was not the demarcation of anything physical. It was a demarcation of a metaphysical age, just like when you have the end of Pisces, and that rolls over to Aries, I think. And the demarcation of Aries rolls back over to what? Whatever it rolls over to. Anyway, obviously we have been given dispensation, and we're still working on becoming all that we need to be legitimate fourth density. Now, we are fourth density if we're living by fourth density values. That's usually the way I answer that question. Fourth density values are the values we know and love. Values that have to do with honor and integrity. And I think we're all trying to live up to those values even as we speak.
I agree. I've heard you answer this question a number of times about this time period in the 2012 being a metaphysical change and not a physical change. A lot of people were really hoping everything would change, and all of a sudden in the
yes, it would have
December
been lovely.
21st,
it would have been easy. It would have been so easy. But it didn't happen that way, and I didn't expect it to. I expected it to be a metaphysical switch, shift, if you will.
Having, like, a date whereby the decision must be made, I suppose, makes sense if that date is the actual end of yellow ray third density existence here, with no, when it goes completely dormant and inactive and there's no third density beings. But until then, as long as we're breathing and walking the surface of the planet and bodies, it makes sense to me that we would have now and every moment henceforth to continue making the decision. I don't think we passed some deadline whereby we're all committed one way or the other now.
Right. No, I do think that kids that are born these days are tending towards being different breed, a little bit less willing to toe the line at somebody else's statement and much more self-sufficient. Anybody else have that impression?
I do, yes. I think that kids nowadays seem to be a little bit more special. Very talented, very bright ideas coming from younger generations. It's very inspiring.
Then again, too, it's hard to attribute cause and effect there because kids today are growing up with far more information at their fingertips than previous generations ever had. And through that are encountering new ideas, new people, presumably, as well, and are empowered by the technologies available to them as well.
That's an interesting point in that I think the two may be related.
Yeah.
Because the amount of information we have available to us, I see as being sort of a clear manifestation of fourth density energies, just not necessarily that I'd say fourth density invented the internet, but that the inspiration for something like the internet and how the internet has evolved and how things are becoming more transparent, things are becoming more available in our physical reality, and there seems to be technology is kind of working to connect us more and more to a sort of global civilization and a global social complex with ourselves available to everybody else. I think that is also related to fourth density.
Yeah, agreed. Real quickly to Klossy, in his question says he was not aware of the Confederation hinting at 2012 as the time period where there was a necessity for making a choice. I ran a quick search and found in December 19, 2005, TransQuo was discussing that topic with emphasis on the time lateral, which I really never grokked. But they do mention 2012 as the sort of cutoff point. There's room for interpretation on what they mean, but just saying to Klaus that there does seem to be some basis in the transcripts.
I'm glad you did that search.
Mm-hmm.
And channeling and interpretation of channeling will always be subject to the culture and the person that's coming through and the social mind. And before 2012, especially in the New Age community, there was so much hype.
Yes, there certainly was.
Just outrageous amounts of hype.
You'd know with all that hype that 90% of it at least was bunk.
And now we're here, it's 2015, and life is going on, and we're still making choices. So
we're doing the best we can, and we're definitely lagging behind.
The world does not seem to be any less crazy.
No.
In 2015.
All righty. Well, thank you, Klaus, for your questions.
It was very stimulating.
We have about 8 minutes left, so time to get through this one from user Ra Dimension on Bringforth. Asked, are there beings of Ra here on Earth today? We feel, I think he's using an inclusive we as in himself, we feel we are parts of the memory complex that have been refocused here on Earth to assist in the shift/harvest. How does this affect my being and my blueprint of self if we truly feel truly that we are messengers of Ra? We traveled and feel transmitted over a long distance. We downloaded in several sessions into this vessel and have been releasing slowly the veil that is required for proper polarity. We have had creator experiences.
I wonder what that little phrase means. You've had experiences of being the creator?
I think so. It seems like a reference to just sort of the mystical realization of oneness.
Okay.
To answer directly, in session 45, Ra says that a significant portion of sixth density wanderers, and sixth density being the majority of wanderers, are of Ra, another large portion being of those who aided South America. And that would be a very significant number of Ra beings here on Earth today. I would assume in maybe in the millions, tens of millions, I'm not sure.
Yes.
But plenty of Ra wanderers on Earth. And I suspect many people who resonate with the Ra material would find their origins in the Ra group. And so many people feel like the Ra material, they're just being reminded of something that they already knew. And I suspect maybe that's because they could have played a role in the inception of the Ra material, or their social memory complex mind is where it came from to begin with. But I want to be careful not to be dismissive of Ra Dimension's question and experiences, but I want to caution that I've seen people who have proclaimed themselves to be wanderers of Ra and then claimed that they could either interpret the Ra material in a more objective manner or have special access to information because of this connection to Ra. And
for the most part, when people claim that, it's automatically wrong.
Yeah, and I've seen them use that as a defense before, where if you question the information they have and they say, well, I'm a wanderer of Ra, so I've got a special connection, so this information's special, and you should give it more significance. But that being said, I think there's a reason for Ra Dimension to feel the way they do, and I think it's worthy of exploring these feelings. If anyone who feels they have some sort of unmanifested message waiting to be shared, whether they believe it's from Ra or any other source or just themselves, I think it's worthy to try to share that. We have the internet now, so it's easy to just share anything at any time. And if you really feel like it should be shared, I believe that if information is pure and worthy, it will stand on its own, whether it's connected to a name like Ra or an association with a particular organization or group or person. If the information is good and it's what people need to hear, people will find it and they'll make use of it. Primary thing I would suggest in this sharing is to keep an eye on self-awareness and constantly contemplating your own motives in sharing, your own desires, and the catalyst you experience due to this sharing. I think that the act of sharing this type of information can bring great catalyst. And if it's utilized, it can bring greater self-awareness. And perhaps in simply following through with this process of sharing this information, Ra Dimension will gain a greater understanding of what this information is and where it comes from and how they themselves fit into this grand scheme of this time of transition on Earth. And as long as the catalyst is recognized and utilized, it will always bring a greater understanding of self. Anybody else have any more thoughts for Ra Dimension?
I think there's a little danger in wanting to identify with being any particular group, whether it's Ra or Hatan or Latos or Latui or anything. I mean, it's sort of like, look, I've got this stature that these beings have, and so listen to what I'm saying. Well, why don't we shoot higher? Why don't we say, hey, I'm part of the Creator, and realize that everybody else is too. Mm-hmm. So that we're all in this together, and do whatever you do with love.
Mm-hmm. And a sense of universal feeling.
I agree with that completely. Gary, did you have any thoughts?
No, not to his questions. I just want to say that you three impressed the bejesus out of me, and I'm happy and proud to be on a team with you guys.
We're glad to have you too, Gary.
You guys are good stuff.
Thank you, Gary. We do have a lot of fun doing this radio show. We really appreciate everybody who listens, and it is an honor to be able to do this with this group and have people listen.
It is indeed, and may I say, Gary, I feel the same way towards you.
Thank you.
All righty. Any last words for our listeners, Carla, before we sign off?
As always, you know that we love you very much, very dearly. We're here because of you. We want to serve you. Please let us know how we can do that. Ask us what you will. We'll do our very best to give you a good discussion on that to the best of our ability to share. And we're honored to be able to do that.
Yes, we really are. Thank you so much, Carla. You have been listening to LL Research's In the Now Q&A with Carla and crew. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our websites, llresearch.org and bringforth.org. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thank you to those of you who submitted questions. If you'd like to submit a question for us before the next show, please read the instructions on our page at blogtalkradio.com/llresearch. Have a wonderful week, and we will be here next Wednesday, a day change for next week, February 11th at 1 p.m. Eastern, and we will talk with you then.
Stars die and the young stars burn, but I don't really know.